On today's show, we take a look at America's changing attitudes toward labor unions and just what it means for the nation's economic future. But first, in other economic news, the board overseeing Detroit's wobbling finances is getting some dire warnings about the city's cash flow situation. Detroit's program management director, William Andrews, told the advisory board the struggling city is on the financial brink yet again. Let's turn to Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes to get an understanding of what this all really means. Daniel, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it seems to be a real familiar refrain. Detroit is running out of money. So how soon do they say this could all happen?
It could happen as early as next month. Some chips have to fall in a certain way. What's hanging out there right now is about $80 million in bond proceeds that the state treasurer's office is holding pending some more and additional reforms with the city. I think there's some hope that they can persuade council and to come to an agreement and to move ahead with some of these reforms, which would release somewhere in the order of $30 million by the end of the year, which would help them kind of kick the can further down the road. But I do think that it's really important to note here that time is really running out here for the city. And with the emergency manager law now repealed, you have, it's argued, you have a weaker one that comes in its place.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, the mayor's office and the treasurer have lost the hammer that they had, which was the emergency manager who had the power to abrogate union contracts, which is probably one of the strongest levers, which is why people push to get rid of it. But that's kind of what we're faced with, which really brings us back to a much greater possibility of Chapter 9 bankruptcy.
I want to get into what the reforms are. What would it take to get State Treasurer Andy Dillon to open up the purse strings and release that escrow money?
Well, one of them is a set of contracts that need to be renewed and approved. One is with I think it's Ernst & Young, which is for financial analysis that they need to move forward with their restructuring. The other is with a law firm, Miller Canfield, a prominent Detroit law firm. But there are members of the city council who have concerns with that, and as a result are raising questions, which is kind of par for the course with the Detroit City Council. There's always a demand for more detail, who's going to get what, and it's a continual process. And meanwhile, they just keep burning cash. And I think that's the thing that your listeners need to understand here. Any city or company, frankly, that is operating in a deteriorating cash position, as long as they're paying people, as long as they're paying their vendors, albeit on a longer time schedule, they're burning cash.
Mm-hmm.
The revenue intake from the city, I think if my memory serves, was about $18 million short in the last collection of tax revenue. So they're not getting the revenue they thought they were going to get, and they continue to burn through cash, and some of their health care spend on health care for employees and retirees was actually higher than they expected. It's pretty obvious to people, I think, what that means. That means that things get worse faster, and that's essentially what they're facing.
Daniel, the relationship between Mayor Dave Bing and Detroit City Council mm-hmm. just seems to be totally at loggerheads at all times.
Yeah, I've been very critical of this, and particularly insofar as the mayor is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really has got, I think if you look at the city council, I've been familiar with Detroit City Council in some ways, depending on which jobs I've had at the paper, close to 20 years. And this is clearly the most competent and the brightest council that I've seen. And clearly there's a majority on council of five members that could be a natural majority for the mayor if
mm-hmm.
he worked with them to build political relationships. But he sees several of them as potential, or has seen them as potential rivals for another term as mayor. And therefore, I think he and his people continually downplay their credibility and question their credibility and their bona fides as to what they bring to the table. The net-net is, I think the mayor has shown a pretty appalling inability to build political alliances. And he's been very open about his disdain. He's been open to me. He said it to me. He said it to me in public places where other people could hear him. I don't think there's any question that the members of council know how the mayor feels about him. And now when he needs them, I think it's a much heavier lift for him. They also, that said, they know they're in a very tough spot. But I think the pace at which they're doing things shows that they really don't appreciate how serious the situation is in its fullness. When all of a sudden an entity starts to trip wires, if you will, mm-hmm. by missing payments, missing payrolls, that has massive implications with their bondholders, and who can start to call the bonds and everything because they've missed these gates. And that becomes a very, very serious predicament. And the financial people, whether they're on the Financial Advisory Board, whether they're in the State Treasurer's Office, whether they're the governor, I mean, you have a very financially astute governor right now. They understand the score, and they know what's going on here, with great clarity. But there really is a search now for Plan B, and I don't think it's readily apparent yet what it's going
to
be.
Well, I know William Andrews says the city needs to find new revenue sources. In your opinion, how likely is that to happen?
Well, I think one of the ways he's probably talking about is the revenue that can be released, but with reform. Whether it's reforming payroll systems, or there's a whole bunch of different systemic things that the state wants the city to do, and that, by the way, would release, I think, another chunk of money if they got some more progress on some of that stuff. That's a way, by reforming it, essentially they can free more revenue to pay the bills. But they have to do it with dispatch, and I think the problem here is you have an old Detroit bureaucracy that is not used to moving quickly. In fact, it probably isn't capable of moving very quickly and is very resistant to somebody pushing them from the outside saying, you need to do this, and you need to do this like by the end of the week. That type of thing, I think, make things very difficult. The other thing we need to make right here is that their lawyer, the Corporation Counsel, Crystal Crittenden,
yes,
I think there's quite a fear that based upon what she did in some earlier challenges to the emergency manager law and other things, that she will come back and create more roadblocks. I also think there's a feeling, and I heard it over the weekend in some conversations I had with some high-ranking officials at the city, that both the unions and potentially Crittenden are going to be filing a bunch of lawsuits to try and claw back some of the cuts that were made under the aegis of the emergency manager law.
Yes.
And therefore they lose the savings and they lose the time. I think reality needs to set in here at some point and say you cannot kick the can proverbially down the road indefinitely and think that something's not going to change.
But let me just ask, on the behalf of perhaps someone who's listening, who's on the west side of the state, and says, so what? What does it mean to the rest of Michigan to have this happen? So what? They can't get their house together. Let the chips fall where they lie.
And you know what? I absolutely get that. I respect that. And I mean that in all sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
That said, there are real implications, I think, for the city, for neighboring communities, including Oakland County, which, by the way, has got one of the highest rated, one of the most stellar credit ratings of any county in the United States, despite what it's gone through the last few years. I think the cost of borrowing for neighboring communities becomes more expensive.
Hmm.
Cost of borrowing for the state becomes more expensive. Relatively speaking, is it something the state of Michigan can handle? Probably. But think about the PR and image hit that not only the city takes, but the state takes. You now will be home. I was thinking about this as I was writing my column for this morning. You now will be the only place, probably the only, I think the only place in the United States where your signature bellwether industry has gone through a very highly publicized bankruptcy, bailout by the federal government, and then the city itself becomes the largest municipal entity in the history of the country ever to go through bankruptcy. I mean, if that doesn't have failure written all over it, I don't know what does.
And the next advisory board meeting isn't even until December 10th, which shocked
right.
me when I read that. Wouldn't you think there would be a sense of, you know, DEFCON 9?
Yeah, but yes, but I think where the heavy lifting Yes, but the heavy lifting is being done behind the scenes. It's being done by the mayor's administration, his project manager, and people from the Treasury Department. The mayor and the governor are supposed to meet this week to start to hash this through and say, you know, what is Plan B? What are some of the bridging mechanisms that we can have here? I think one of the real concerns that I think a likely possibility here is they try to paper this thing over and kick it down the road to the next election in 2013. I mean, that's a year away, but you have the possibility that the mayor may not run for re-election, because I think a lot of people feel that if he ran for re-election, he couldn't get re-elected. And you have a new council that would come in, and they would be representing districts. So for the first time since, I think, 1918, a Detroit City Council would be comprised of members who actually represent geographic districts within the city. I mean, currently, and I think a lot of people may not appreciate this, the entire city council could live in one apartment building.
Right.
That said, Rick Snyder is not the kind of governor, and I think has shown in the first 2 years that he does not want to paper over problems and keep pushing them and kicking them forward. And I think if the emergency manager law would have stood up, there is a very distinct possibility that before Christmas he would have named an emergency manager for the city.
Now he can't.
If he does, it's under Public Act 72, and that person does not have the power to abrogate union contracts or to override the will of the elected officials.
Daniel House, always good to talk with you. Thanks for talking with us today on Stateside.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.